Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and what we're going to do is sort of set a mood for today. We're going to be able to give you maybe a bit of an upbeat lift, and you may say, hey, Donna, it's only Tuesday. What do I need that for? Well, isn't something positive usually a good thing to experience? Well, today we're going to be talking with a Zen master, and we're going to be talking with Zen Master Genpo Mirzel Roshi, and he's on the phone with me right now. We're going to be talking about big mind, big heart, finding your way. Genpo, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
It is such a delight to have you on. Now, I want my audience to know that you have taught traditional Zen for, oh my goodness, well over 25 years, and in the process of doing that, you decided that there was something that you could put together, and it was called Big Mind, because you wanted to bring a more suitable and effective way of thinking to those of us in the Western world. And you said it works with the ego instead of against it. And you've been working with people from all walks of life. This isn't something that is, quote-unquote, a religion. It is something that is a philosophy that is really empowering to people. But I would like for my audience to hear your story about how you discovered this journey that you have been experiencing for so many years and how it became such a central part of your heart and your life.
Sure, of course. Do you want me to start back in 1971 I had a first experience or spiritual awakening in the Mojave Desert in February of 71.
How did that happen to you? What happened in 71?
I was teaching school at the time. I was also a California lifeguard. And I went out to the desert with two of my friends. We went out camping. And they had hiked off on their own. And I was sitting there alone on a mountain top. And from that mountain top, I was just reflecting on my life. And as I reflected, a kind of natural question came up to me, and that was, where is home? And as I sat there with that question, what I realized, I had an actual opening, and the self fell away, and I experienced a oneness with the universe, with the cosmos, where there was no separate self any longer. And in that moment, everything just fell into place, made sense, was clear, and my life took a 180-degree turn. Up until that moment, my life was headed in a particular direction, and all of a sudden, that direction no longer seemed to be the direction of my life, but a new direction, which was much more intuitive, looking in and helping other people reach a state of awakening.
You have felt that what you experienced was obviously very profound for you, and in the process since that monumental moment in your life that turned everything around for you, in the recent years you have been quite concerned about the environment that we see around us, the way various conditions are evolving, and we seem to be in a turbulence that's picking up a momentum. It's not unlike watching a storm front come in. And you said, time is of the essence, and we need to really be present and to be aware of ourselves. Tell us a little bit about something called voice dialogue, because
sure,
that is something that is quite significant in your book.
Well, the Big Mind, Big Heart process, which I developed in 1999, June of 99, really has two roots. One root, of course, is traditional Zen practice, which I began in 71. And the other root is more of a Western psychological, which I began in the late 60s and in Gestalt therapy, but more the voice dialogue route, which I started studying back in 1983 with Hal and Sidra Stone. It was then that I really dove into the voice dialogue work, studied for about 10 months, twice a week with Hal particularly, and found that the voice dialogue really offered something that was really complementary to our Zen training and allowed Zen to become really a very healthy practice for us Westerners. In the East, in Japan and China and India and, of course, some of the other countries where it was practiced, Korea and Vietnam, Zen had a container within the Buddhist framework and within the Eastern traditions. In the West, it really needed a Western container. And I always felt, even way back in 1972, that a Western psychological foundation would be very helpful for the Zen training. Because what can happen in traditional Zen training is that certain aspects of ourself become shadows or disowned, and we really need to work with these shadows or these what I call disowned voices. And Hal and Sidra had found what I felt, at least at that point, and I still do, to be the most effective way to deal with disowned aspects of ourself. So in 99, after 16 years of working with voice dialogue, I found a way to bridge the two, Zen practice and the Western psychological practice. And what it's turned out to be is something that goes beyond Zen and beyond psychotherapy. And that's why psychotherapists are very interested in it, and also religious leaders in all the various traditions. If someone looks at the book, there are blurbs or excerpts from religious leaders from every tradition, every major tradition, almost. I can't say they're all in there. And they have very positive things to say about the big mind, big heart process.
You have a statement in here that Westerners are a kind of a different breed, and I chuckled when I read that, because we do have a very unique mindset to many of the cultures of the world, and that is because we are a melting pot of cultures. We have so much variance within our environment that we really are that, and I like that description. You make a statement that the mind that has no goal and no aim, when someone is working with the big mind, it's the experience is much more profound, because what we're doing is constantly and continually letting go, not grasping anything, and opening and opening and opening, so that the mind is limitless and boundless rather than narrow and restricted. And that's one of the reasons why you wanted to get this book out. You wanted to get the word out, the printed word out, so that people could start doing something right now. How did this change you?
Well, if you're asking how did the big mind process change me dramatically, even after all those years of training from 71 to 99 and having gone through what we call a traditional koan study, and the Soto study both, and becoming a Zen teacher and receiving the transmission back in 1980, and having taught since the mid-70s, I found that the big mind and big heart process really has taught me just a tremendous amount. It's like having given birth to a baby, and now the baby is teaching me. And what it's done is allowed me to work with people in a way that facilitates them getting in touch with their own innate wisdom that every person has, and the compassion that we find in the Buddha or in other great compassionate people. It opens up the mind and heart. And the way it does that is, instead of trying to get outside of our own created limitations or boundaries that we create in order to protect ourselves from unknown threats to our life, we step outside of that boundary in an instant. And it's very simple, and that's what's so profound about this. Normally, we don't realize that we're inside the boundary or in the box until we start pushing up against our own walls and our own barriers, and then we realize, oh my gosh, I'm imprisoned in this room, in this place, and what we don't even realize is we created the prison in order to protect ourselves from the outside environment and people and things. And we can step out in an instant, which is actually beyond space and time in that instance, by simply allowing the facilitator, that would be me in this case, allowing me to speak to that which is outside the boundary. And as soon as I ask to speak to that which is outside the boundary, and we have many names for it, big mind or big heart or the limitless self or the one who is already absolutely content, the moment we step outside, we find that we're completely free and liberated, and we don't have those same barriers now imprisoning us.
You bring, by the way, for those of you that have just tuned in, we're talking with Zen Master Gimpo Mirzel Rashi. His book is Big Mind, Big Heart, Finding Your Way. It's a book that talks about his journey, but also about the potential of perhaps your own. And if you are in a quagmire about your life, about what's the value, if you get agitated on what you see about what's being presented on the news and various sides of things, that you just feel so helpless because you can't do anything about it, this is something that maybe would give you a sense of understanding and be able to help you realize that you might be able to do something significant just first for yourself, before you start being concerned about anybody else.
It's actually, if one really goes into the book and the CD that's in the book, that's included with the book, or in any of the DVDs, it's an empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing short of empowering the individual so that they don't, and we don't, feel so helpless and hopeless in the situation that we're facing in the world right now.
You have a sentence in your book, we see the world in a dysfunctional way, and because of that, we suffer. That, I think, is a timeless statement, because I don't care where you study in history, what time frame, there's always misery of one kind or another. And I'm not saying that anybody has to be the originator of that, but it is a fact. And life is just a gigantic school, in my view. But I also like where you say we're at a time when we've got to tear down the monastery walls, we've got to tear down all walls and barriers that are keeping this wisdom confined to a select limited group of people and open it up to world consciousness. Tell us about the voice dialogue. Give us an example of what it is, because you say this is within ourselves. How many voices are there?
Well, you know, nobody knows. I use the figure 10,000, because in Buddhism we talk about 10,000 states of mind or 10,000 states of consciousness, which just means more than we can ever count. And if we can imagine a name, we can make it into a voice. So it's really the only limitation, how many voices there are, is the limitation of our own lack of imagination. If we can give it a name, we can give it a voice. I had cancer. I went through cancer at one point. And so I asked to speak to the cancer cells and the tumor that I had. And it spoke to me very, very truthfully, directly, and right to the point. And I've done this work with other people who have had MS or cancer or AIDS, and it's amazing. If we can name it, we can speak to it. So you asked about the way the voice dialogue. Now, I do not hold true to voice dialogue technique because I'm more interested in raising the level of consciousness. So I don't call it voice dialogue what I do. I studied voice dialogue. Alan Sidra certified me to be able to work in the voice dialogue. But what I really do is not voice dialogue, because there's a certain technique and there's a certain way that to honor their work. And I'm more interested in how it can awaken us spiritually and how it can, what I call, unkink our hose. In other words, if we see our whole system as being a conduit to the source of energy, or you can call it to God or to the source or to our original nature, if we see ourselves with kinks where our energy is not flowing at its highest and best level, what I'm about and what my work is about is unkinking those knots and taking away the barriers that obstruct us from being and becoming our fullest potentiality. So the big mind is more the term I would use. But the voice dialogue works this way. You ask to speak to a voice. So if I was to ask you, may I speak to the voice of the protector, then you would simply say, okay, I am the protector. I'm not the self anymore. Now I am just the protector. And I use an analogy that I think works very well that I came up with a couple of years back, which is like a corporation, that we're each a corporation and we have all these employees, 10,000 employees. And we're going to take each employee out and hold an interview with them. And what we're going to do is we're going to give them a working title and a job description, and then eventually tell them what they're producing, who they're working for, who the boss is, and how to do their job more efficiently and in a better way. Because right now in the corporation or the self may or may not know all these employees and certainly may not know the job that each one is supposed to be doing. So we call each one out. So if I call the protector out, we'd then speak to the protector, and the protector would say, okay, my job is to protect. All right, well, what do you protect? Well, I have to protect the self. Well, what do you protect the self from? Well, I have to protect him, first of all, from the world, because it's a dangerous place out there. We never really know what will be. There's nothing that we can really count on. Anything can happen at any moment. Ceiling can come down on us. There can be an earthquake. There can be anything. So I have to really build a wall around him to protect him from the world at large. Well, what else do you have to protect? Well, I have to protect his family, his loved ones, his wife, his children, his pets, his students, and so on. All right, well, what else do you protect? Well, frankly, I have to protect him from himself, because he can be dangerous. He can want to do stupid things. He has a lot of old habits and patterns that, frankly, aren't so good for him. So I have to make sure he doesn't keep going down that rut. All right, well, what else do you have to do? Well, I have to protect him from his emotions, because some of his emotions can really get the better of him. So I have to make sure that he doesn't get too angry, enraged, or too jealous. All right, well, I get that. So what else do you have to protect? Well, again, very frankly, I have to protect the world from him, because not only is he dangerous to himself, but if I didn't protect him, and if the controller didn't control him, he could be really out of control. And society then would have to come in, step in, and protect the world from him. So I have a big job. It's a 24/7 job, and it's more than one role. So you get the point that as the protector, I have to look at the self and see how the self relates to the world.
You have a statement in your book where you said, what is hurting most of the time? You call it the small self. Big mind doesn't hurt. It's beyond pain and suffering. So you ask the question, where do we think our attention is focused most of the time? And it's usually on ourselves, which I think is very true. And we need to pay attention to that because that is what makes the difference. That is really what makes the difference. Where are we going to put that focus? And that's what the big mind, big heart is all about, isn't it?
That's correct. And the moment we step outside the self, the moment we can then witness the self doing its thing, we're already outside of the self. And why this technique works so well is what we've known for 2,500 years, since the time of original Shakyamuni Buddha, is that the cause of our suffering is attachment to self. It's also attachment to our ideas, our notions, our belief systems, etc., but it's all our self, the whole conglomerate of things that we call me. And the moment we start speaking to some of these other voices, we're separating the voice from the self, so we're creating a little distance from the self. Now, of course, I'm going to be more attached to myself than yourself.
Obviously.
Right? And I'm going to be more attached to my family than your family, to my car than your car, my home than your home. So whatever I call me or mine, I'm going to be more attached to than I am what I call you and yours, which is just obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment I start speaking about the self in the third person and I distance myself from it, it's easier to let it go. And we know, we've known this in Zen and Buddhism for all those years, we know that letting go of the self is the key to liberation and to peace.
You have a statement also, there's absolutely no reason for me to be afraid of anything because nothing can hurt me, nothing can destroy me, nothing can harm me in any way whatsoever, and I can't lose anything, for I am everything. And that was out of the section that you have related to no fear as one of the voices. And that's something that's in your book. You have a number of different conversations with these various parts of self. And I think it brings an awareness that we can be more in tune with who we are, what we like, what we don't like, and become more acquainted with ourselves. And when we do that, then we're going to be a lot more comfortable in this personality, in this garb of whatever it is that we've chosen to experience. We're going to be a lot more comfortable with that because we realize that we don't have to have fear.
That's exactly correct. As soon as we step outside the self into that no fear, big mind place, then that in that place we actually feel complete contentment and absolutely okay about who we are.
You have a quote by Yamada Roshi. Said, you know, it wasn't until my 70s that I really got to the place where I didn't care about what people thought of me or expected of me or how they saw me. What a liberation. There's nothing like it. And I think of the cartoon characters that have been developed
uh-huh.
portray that so beautifully.
Right.
I mean, I get emails from friends that'll say, oh, this is what so-and-so said. You got to take it. And you just sit and laugh. But the reality is that you will hear that from people that are mature, that have gone through life, and they'll say, I can laugh at myself. I don't take myself so seriously anymore. And if I decide to wear, you know, a purple hat with green fuchsias on it, it's okay. Nobody's going to care.
That's right.
And if they do, I don't.
Right, because they've taken a little distance from themselves.
Right. Now, that doesn't mean they've become thoughtless. It doesn't mean that they are not participating in life. It is that sense of no attachment, realizing that maybe they're just a custodian, whether they're wealthy or whether they've got a nickel in their pocket. It doesn't make any difference. They're in this life and they're experiencing this life And they don't have to have it. They don't have to possess it. They don't have to own it. It is quite an interesting state of mind.
Isn't it? It's so true. And, you know, the latest development in the Big Mind, Big Heart work that's really very recent, it is in the book. I had to put it in after I wrote the book. I wrote the book actually a year ago, June, in 9 or 10 days that I was with my son and daughter, who, by the way, live up there in the Seattle area. We were on vacation in Hawaii, and I wrote the book, but then I later added this section on the triangle. And the triangle is pretty amazing concept that anybody can get almost immediately. And if they use this triangle, it can help them get beyond themselves. And it's very simple. If we look at a triangle, and we look at the left side of the base and the right side, and we use the opposites there. So let's say fear on the left side and no fear on the right. Or if we say discontent on the left and content on the right. Or if we say limited, small mind on the left and big mind on the right. And we ask to speak to one at a time. In other words, speak to the voice of fear, now speak to the voice of no fear. And then we go to the apex of the triangle, which includes and transcends the two opposites, and say that this is our being that we are always coming from when we are not stuck in either base, either the left-hand side of the base or the right-hand side, and we are able to move freely from fear to no fear, from doubt to faith or trust, from contentment to discontentment, back to contentment. Our whole life becomes freely functioning, and we act appropriately in the given time and place that we find ourselves, because we act with wisdom and we act with more love and compassion when we come from that apex.
And also, it enables life to bring to us what we often want.
Absolutely.
It's a fascinating process. It's a process that can be easy or can be a very difficult one, depending on how we want to experience it. But I think more than anything else, it's okay to just let it evolve.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I find, and being a Westerner, we have an attitude of add water, mix, and you're supposed to have it. And sometimes it doesn't sit very well.
Right.
And we wonder why. We wonder why someone else is got it, supposedly, and we haven't gotten it. And your book, Big Mind, Big Heart, really gives an inside track to someone, and I think the gift that it gives is do it at your own speed. Do it in your own way.
Right.
Don't try to force it. Don't try to make it happen, because it's going to be what it is. You're going to be who you are because you already are.
That's right.
You're going to be there, but you're just in the process of discovering who you are. My guest today has been Gimpo Murzel Rashi. His wonderful book is Big Mind, Big Heart, Finding Your Way. It is a book that not only gives you tools to work with, but you know what? It's something that you could pick up, read, maybe only get a drop or two of what you feel fits you at the moment. You could put it down, put it aside, and whenever you're comfortable with it, pick it up again and read it. It's meant to be a companion. It's meant to be a friend. It's meant to be something that you become acquainted with so that you know that you have a place, a space to experience that's all yours, belongs to just you. Do you have a website, Gimpo, that
yes.
people can go to?
Yes, we do. It's bigmind.org or gimpo.org. And, you know, I know you're in the Seattle area, and because my children are there, in fact, I'm going to be there this weekend, I do a lot of events up there in the Seattle area.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a delight having you as a guest, and his website, Gimpo's website, is bigmind.org or gimpo.org, which is G-E-M-P-O.org. And, of course,
let me make sure that they could hear that was an N like Nancy and not an M.
Okay.
They won't get to it.
It's good you corrected me. Gimpo, G-E-N like Nelly, P-O.org. Thank you so much for being my guest. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Don't go away. Lots of good things to share today. We're going to be right back.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, and hey, telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227 if you're in the USA, 888-815-9756 if you're in Canada, and our other line is 530-876-3222, again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. Well, it is just this traveling time that I'm in, and I'm going to be on my way down to Southern California. And for those of you who are interested in meeting with me while I'm down there, give me a call at 800-872-8852. Next week, I'm going to be on my way to New York City, and then I think I'm going to have to put those pieces of luggage away, which will be a good thing for a while. And I want to thank those of you that are sending me emails and stories and information. I really, really appreciate it. And for those of you that would like to do the same, if you have a recipe you'd like to contribute, if there is something special that you would like me to know about, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. If you're a first-time listener, I'm delighted that you're able to join the Donna Sebo Show listening family and BBSRadio.com, because we are here to bring you programming that you will enjoy. And don't forget, we've got archives that you can listen to as well. If you've missed any programming, just know you'll have a chance to go back and listen to it. For those of you that are new, all you need to do is give me, when you call in, your first name or your initial, and then after that, let me do my thing. I will give you my mental impressions, and then you're welcome to ask me anything that you like about anyone or any situation. I told you I'd received some wonderful, wonderful information, and I got this story. It's from a man named Thomas, and it's called The Pickle Jar. And maybe some of you have received this in your email. It's a type of story that people floated around, and it's a timeless story, and I really, really liked it. So I wanted to share it with you. It says, the pickle jar, as far back as I can remember, sat on the floor beside the dresser in my parents' bedroom. When he got ready for bed, Dad would empty his pockets and toss his coins into the jar. As they were dropped into the jar, they landed with a merry jingle when the jar was almost empty. And then, as it began to get a little fuller, the tones muted to a dull thud as it filled up. And this person that sent the story said, I used to squat on the floor in front of the jar and admire the copper and silver circles that glinted like a pirate's treasure when the sun poured through the bedroom window. When the jar was filled, Dad would sit at the kitchen table and roll the coins before taking them to the bank. Taking the coins to the bank was always a big production. Stacked neatly in a small cardboard box, the coins were placed between Dad and me on the seat of his old truck. Each and every time as we drove to the bank, Dad would look at me hopefully. Those coins are going to keep you out of the textile mill, son. You're going to do better than me. This old mill town's not going to hold you back. Also, each and every time as he slid the box of rolled coins across the counter at the bank towards the cashier, he'd grin proudly. These are for my son's college fund. He'll never work at the mill all of his life, like me. We'd always celebrate each deposit by stopping for an ice cream cone. I always got chocolate. Dad always got vanilla. When the clerk at the ice cream parlor handed Dad his change, he would show me the few coins nestled in his palm. When we get home, we'll start filling the jar again. He always let me drop the first coins into the empty jar. As they rattled around with a brief happy jingle, we'd grin at each other. You'll get to college on pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters, son. You'll get there. I'll see to that. Well, as the years went on and I ended up finishing college, I finally took a job in another town. Once, while I was visiting my parents, I used the phone in their bedroom and noticed that the pickle jar was gone. Apparently, it had served its purpose and had been removed. I got sort of emotional about it as I stared at the spot beside the dresser where the jar had always stood. My dad was a man of few words, and he never lectured me on the values of determination, perseverance, and faith. That old pickle jar had taught me all these virtues far more eloquently than the most flowery words or lecture could have done. Well, eventually I got married. I have a beautiful wife, Susan, and I told her about the significant part this lowly pickle jar had played in my life as a boy. In my mind, it defined more than anything else how much my dad had loved me. No matter how rough things got at home, Dad continued to doggedly drop his coins into the jar. It was even during the summer when my dad got laid off from the mill, and Mama had to serve dried beans several times a week because we couldn't afford anything else. Not one single coin was taken from the jar. To the contrary, as my dad would look across the table at me, he'd pouring catsup over my beans to make them more palatable, he became more determined than ever to make a way out for me. He would say to me, son, when you finish college, you'll never have to eat beans again unless you want to. First Christmas after our daughter Jessica was born was a very special one because we spent the holiday with my parents. After dinner, Mom and Dad were sitting next to each other on the sofa taking turns cuddling their very first grandchild. A little girl's name was Jessica, and she began to cry a little bit, very, very softly. And my wife, Susan, took her from my dad's arms, saying she probably needs to be changed. And she took the baby into my parents' bedroom to diaper her. Now, when Susan came back into the living room, I noticed she was a little teary. Her eyes looked watery. She took Jessica over to my dad, and then, after she put her in my dad's arms, took my hand and said, come with me. And she took me into my parents' room, and she said to me quietly, look. And her eyes directed them to a spot on the floor beside the dresser. I was amazed. There, as if it had never been removed, stood the old pickle jar. The bottom was already covered with coins. I walked over to that old pickle jar, dug down into my pocket, and pulled out all the coins that I had. I was filled with a lot of emotion, and I dropped those coins into the jar. When I had finished doing that, screwing on the top, I looked up and saw that my dad, who was carrying my baby girl, had slipped quietly into the room. We looked at each other, and I knew he was feeling the same emotions I was feeling. Neither one of us could say a word. We were so choked up. This truly touched my heart, and I know it has yours as well, said the sender that put this story into the email to me. Sometimes we're so busy adding up our troubles that we forget to count our blessings. Sorrow looks back, worry looks around, but always remember, faith looks up. And to this I'd like to add, to look back is to be depressed. To look about is to be distressed. But to look up is to be blessed. I want to thank Thomas for sending that along. I don't know who the originator of the story is or was, but I think it's a very poignant one. It's amazing how something, just like a pickle jar, can make a difference and make an impression in life. And it can also teach in its own special way. So I want to thank Thomas for sending that to me, because I think it's just a beautiful story, and one definitely worth sharing time and time again. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a call if you'd like to chat with me. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227 is the telephone number to call in to. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Nothing more and nothing less. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Karen Simmons. Karen has been a guest on my show before. This is a woman who has dedicated her life to working with children, children with special needs. And we're going to be talking about some of those kids tomorrow. She's a delightful lady, and we're going to be learning about how families have worked with different situations with children. And on Thursday, we're going to be playing the best of Donna, because this lady is going to take her traveling microphone on the road. And then on Friday, we're going to have an open mic day. And what does open mic mean? It means exactly that. It means the whole hour is dedicated. If you want to call in, you'll be able to do it at any time during the hour. And I have stories and special things that I want to share with you. So no guest has been booked that day, but we will have a wonderful opportunity to share our thoughts and interaction. And then, by golly, we've got a lot of other guests that are going to be coming up between now and the end of this month of October. So just know that we're going to be able to fill you in on those guests as we get closer to having them on the air. If you have teenagers and you wonder sometimes if you're going a little bit insane because you're hearing this strange lingo like BRB, now there's so many different types of legal, but to me, in my world, I'm not around teenagers all that much, and I've not gotten into this abbreviation of terminology. But you'll see commercials on television talking about it. And what tickled me is I saw one commercial where Grandma was using all of this lingo. And it's something that is worth being aware of. So I thought I'd share with you about some of the things that I have come across in the way of information. Of course, LOL, I'm sure you've heard about that, laughing out loud. But what is the verbal shorthand that these young people are using when they're texting or chatting? Well, here's some of it. Teenagers apparently are dropping vowels because it makes typing messages easier and faster. Words like very become V-R-Y. Smart is spelled S-M-R-T. Well, goodness gracious, that's nothing new. I can remember taking a shorthand course where that's exactly what you did so you could speed up your writing for taking notes. And that was around years ago. But the kids think this is something brand new, and they're using it, and I think it's pretty effective. Just remember, they may use it in their lingo, but in business, it doesn't work very well. Also, it's common for substitutions by teens to be made so words look ciphered. That means using a Z to replace an S in plural words or an X instead of a K. So skips, S-K-I-P-S, would read S-X-I-P-Z. And symbols stand in for letters they resemble, such as the dollar sign for the letter S. And they said, don't ever be concerned about spelling, because when teenagers are chatting with friends, they are left purposefully in the way that they are, and they said typing errors, forget that. T-E-H for the, and T-A-H-T for that, and L-I-E-K instead of like. Well, they just have to remember when they're in English class, they can't do it that way. But the thing is, this is what they do. This is their way of talking. And I can remember, gee, when I was growing up, people talking about pidgin English and all kinds of things. Every generation likes to do something that's very unique for themselves. Now, if you really want to find out more about this, you can go to a website, teenchatdecoder.com, teenchatdecoder.com, netlingo.com, netlingo.com, and noslang.com. All you have to do is type in the term, and they'll show you what it is in teenage description. So BRB is be right back, BFF and BFFL is best friends forever and best friends for life, and CD9/POS is parents over shoulder. CUL, see you later, IDK/IDC, I don't know, I don't care. Well, a little bit of education in the teenage world. We're going to be taking a break. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. Have you ever heard of a Zorse? That's Z-O-R-S-E. Well, I've got a picture of one in front of me, and it is absolutely incredible. It is a zebra. It is, the colt came from a zebra mother and a horse father. A zebra and a regular horse. And she is such a rare breed. Now, she said, unlike the relatively few other Zorses who have stripes all over their body, Eclipse's head and rump are striped, but her body is pure white. And I'm looking at this magnificent horse. And also, her tail is white. It's just amazing. It looks like somebody went and took two different animals and put them together. Beautiful, beautiful horse, or a Zorse, excuse me. She's not a horse, she's a Zorse. And she is in a German safari park, and she is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it is amazing how these things evolve. So I just thought I would share that with you. If anybody brings that up, you will say, I heard Donna talk about a Zorse. I've never heard of this before. So anyway, I appreciate all the information that people send me. It's just absolutely amazing what goes on in this world. There are a number of people that through the years I have met that have ended up having problems with thinning hair. Well, typically we think it's just for men. That's not the case. Women often will go through this experience, and it is something women don't like and something men don't like. Well, I came across this information, and I thought I would share it with you. There were two women, a mother and daughter, Angel Marie and her daughter. She said, I was having just a terrible time. Now, Angel Marie is middle-aged, and she lives in New York, and in her late 40s, where she had always had such thick, abundant hair, it was awful. She said, it is just absolutely horrible. Now, interestingly enough, her daughter's name is Angel as well. So both of these angels were experiencing problems with their hair. When she knew how bad it was is when she came home from a trip during the summer and found that her scalp had gotten sunburned. Well, she was just absolutely, totally mortified with this. And she said, what am I going to do? How am I going to handle this? So she'd do what any of us would do. She checked out all kinds of herbal products, hair care products. She followed anybody and everybody's recommendation. While she's going through this, her daughter, Angel, remember they're both named Angel, the daughter, who was only 30 years of age, was finding that her hair was falling out. Something was really wrong. Well, they happened to get in touch with a dermatologist who specialized in hair loss. Went in and talked to them, and he said, women have a lot of factors that can contribute to hair loss. He said, when women get into menopause, it can be hormones. And for the daughter, Angel, it is a combination of inheriting some of the genetic patterns her mother had, but also stress and diet, because the younger Angel was always dieting. However, he said, if you add a combination of silica, the plant horsetail, and marine-based proteins, I think you're going to find your hair will get stronger and you won't continue losing it. And you know what? He said 61% of women who took it for 6 months experienced hair growth without any side effects. Now, there is a supplement that he recommended called Nucrin, and it's N-O-U-R-K-R-I-N. They said, we've tried everything else. What have we got to lose? So they found that after just a few weeks of taking a couple of supplements a day, their hair was growing back. After 3 months, people were commenting on the abundance of hair. And her hairdresser, with the older Angel, said, whatever you're doing, keep it up. Now, many months later, almost a year later now, they have thicker, healthier hair than they have had in years. So this is some of the information that I wanted to share with you. One is, it's normal to lose hair about 3 months after a very stressful experience, and usually it will grow back. But diet is very, very important. Your hair is made up of protein, so if you have too little protein, it can cause it to thin. So remember, meats, beans, tofu, whatever your system works best with, are all good sources of protein. Also, fish oil. The fish oil has some of the same components as Nucrin. And then, if you are having a problem with your scalp and with your hair, and this is an old, old method, before washing your hair, run some nutrient-rich olive oil through your hair and put on a shower cap and leave it for about 20 minutes in shampoo. And it really does wonders for the scalp. They call it the salad dressing trick. And also, remember, garlic, onions, and turnips are great sources of sulfur, which the body uses to build stronger and thicker hair. So I thought I would share that with you because it's something that affects so many people, and we don't realize how important our diet is. And when you're taking supplements, when you're taking care of yourself, sometimes you may not be getting enough of a particular supplement. That's why it's always a good thing to check yourself out, to find out what is it that's working well, what isn't. I learned from a woman when I was on my recent trip to Alaska about selenium. And she said, if you want to not go gray, you have selenium in your nutritional package. She said, you won't have gray hair. It's a lack of selenium that turns the hair gray. So you learn something new every day. And speaking of that, I want to remind you always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Just like Genpo was saying today with big mind, big heart, we're the source. We need to come back and recognize who we are and the value of who we are. Because each of us have our own special gifts and talents. Each of us have something very special to be able to empower this life with. Why don't you just give yourself the time to explore and make it okay that maybe you don't have to do everything today, but you can take some time tomorrow. Take some time today, in fact. Make it now. Be good to yourself and enjoy your life. Because today is exactly what you've got. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking with Karen Simmons tomorrow. Be here same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.